Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. When were the good old days exactly? Do you know? Was there really some glorious time of happiness and self-sufficiency and social cohesion, a time that has since slipped away? When we romanticize the good old days, do we also idolize the food ways of the past? And is that fair? You may not have a definitive answer for such questions, but you likely have some hunches. On today's show, we have a wide-ranging and eyes-wide-open talk about life in rural Newfoundland, in the past and the present. Can farming save rural Newfoundland, or is it all up to tourism now? Maybe both. Stick around.
When we were a big family, we had a meal that was put on the table. You ate it, and when it was gone, you said, "Now, I wonder, did I like this?" If you want to live here in rural Newfoundland, you got to do whatever it takes to live here. People come in trying to break crab out of a shell, and for what you're getting out of it, you see them cutting down, and there's juice squirting up in their face and on the wall. And you say, "For what?"
The mark of a great storyteller is that when you end up off topic, you have no idea how you got there, and you're in no hurry to go back to wherever you came from anyways. We're in the lovely community of Fairyland. We're at the home of Jane and Brian Yeager, garlic farmers and natural gardeners. You may remember them from an earlier episode of Fit to Eat. You might hear their laughs in the background, but today we're talking to one of their friends and neighbors. He's a carpenter, a fisher, a farmer, a B&B owner, a former garden raider, and a superb raconteur. That's a fancy word for a storyteller. And he remembers growing up in a very different Newfoundland Labrador than what it is today. We're overlooking the beautiful harbor and bay. It's a brilliant sunny day. Take a picture before the fog rolls in and join us.
Well, my name is Charlie Dunn, and I'm originally from Renews. Right now we're here in Fairyland, which I've been living here for the past 38 years.
So we were talking a minute ago. I mentioned the good old days and food, and you corrected me on at least one of those things. What did you correct me on?
Well, mostly what I corrected is a thing with me when people talk about the good old days, and I suppose I've lived through that, but to me, the good old days are now, because we have more than we want. We have everything we want to eat. We have clothing. We got cars. We go on holidays. It's something that we couldn't do years ago, so it makes you wonder as to why people call it the good old days.
Back then you were self-sufficient in food, and now we're buying 90% at the grocery store, and so we think it was the good old days.
No doubt about it, but then you were self-sufficient, but we worked hard at it.
Yes.
We worked hard. Back then there was 10 of us, there was 10 in family, there were 7 boys and 3 girls, and my father and mother, and my father was a polio survivor. He had polio in his arm, so we grew our own vegetables, yeah. And it was something that I couldn't wait to get away from. And every family wasn't doing that. They weren't all growing their own vegetables, because I guess some people had jobs and they could afford to buy this food and whatever. So while some young kids in our school were going off playing ball or doing something, we were farming, you know.
I've heard this a lot when people say, "I don't eat turnips anymore because that reminds me of being poor."
Well, you know something? Maybe that's why I didn't like turnips until
okay.
Late. I never ate much turnips. And even with a Sunday's dinner, a jig's dinner, and you'd have all this veggies, everything I ate was raw. And I think the reason was that when we were young fellas, and I guess out of boredom, we used to raid people's gardens. We'd get into their gardens in the nighttime, you'd pull up a couple of turnips and you'd eat it, and there was, of course, they tell you you're supposed to eat so much dirt a day, but, or a year, but you're not supposed to eat it all at one time. So we tear up, you know, like a couple, there wasn't anything damaging, but you tear up a couple of turnips and then a couple of carbs. I ate everything, carrots and turnips, potatoes, cabbage, everything was raw. And it's only in the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years, that I've got a liking for cooked vegetables.
Really?
Which is so strange. Now, my other brothers and sisters, they like it. You know, I guess they're normal. But I just liked it raw.
So, two things. Where did you get the seeds? And what did you put on the gardens?
Back then, we used kelp.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody in our town, where we came from, had horses. So, you would use horse manure.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing. Horse manure and kelp was the two big things that we used for fertilizer.
Yeah.
And you just saved your seeds from year to year?
The seeds will be saved, and you will cut the eyes. There will be certain potatoes, and of course, I didn't know which ones, but my father would always set aside some potatoes, which were seed potatoes, and then in the spring of the year, I remember him sitting down with a knife and cutting the eyes out of the potatoes, and that's what you would say.
And you were fishing at the same time, or your family was fishing?
Well, just about everybody in my family. My brother that I'm fishing with right now, he's been fishing for 43 years, I think, and it's funny because I don't like fishing. I fished back in 1979. I'm fishing now. I'm a carpenter by trade, and I don't like it any more now than I did back in 1979, because I thought that it was something that you couldn't really make a good living from. And I went fishing about 5 years ago when we had a downfall in the economy, and there was a lot of houses being built prior to that, I guess, with the oil industry, and all of a sudden that sort of stopped. So
yeah.
If you want to live here in rural Newfoundland, you got to do whatever it takes to live here.
Yeah. When you were growing up, what percentage of your food was fish and what percentage was the vegetables?
I think it was all fish and vegetables because, basically, that's what we had. Yeah. You know, that was the rough, what we call rough grub here in Newfoundland. Fish was a common thing. Everybody had fish. You had salt fish, you would have that, like say, probably once a week. Then you would have fresh fish. You'd either stew it or you'd have it fried. We hunted moose. We hunted birds like ducks and that sort of thing. We had rabbits. We grew our own vegetables. We had berries in the fall of the year. So everything basically we had was from the land.
Yeah.
Except, of course, you go with your... I can't say we didn't. We did have a cow at one time that you reared. We did have a pig, hens, and that sort of thing.
I have a pet peeve where people talk about the fishery supporting people here for hundreds of years. And I'm thinking if they didn't have gardens and cows and the rhubarb patch and so on, nobody would have survived here at all.
I don't think that they would have. I don't think that that they would have been able to survive just on the fish. Unfortunately, and I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be lynched for saying this, when the cod moratorium came on, I think that it was something that was needed for Newfoundland, because I think that there was too many Newfoundlanders that were totally dependent on it and not going out and getting a good education. I think after the cod moratorium was called, the young people said, okay, then, well, if I want to survive, I got to get educated. I got to work at something else. And it's after proven now, because I know when the cod fishery took place here in Newfoundland, and I guess for hundreds of years, and when I was a young fella, you would never think I'm going for a walk on the beach. You couldn't walk on the beach because there were small fish that the processors wouldn't buy that was thrown overboard, and that would rot in the beaches, and there was all sorts of things that, you know, like, I mean, you couldn't walk. We used to call it gurry or blubber or whatever, and the rocks were just covered with it.
You hear people talking about food security, fancy terms like that, and so on and so forth, and what it's referring to is doing some of the things that you used to do back in the day and that you were glad you didn't have to do for a number of years. What's causing this change in terms of our culture, thinking about this as a good thing, thinking romantically?
I think it's a wonderful thing, and I thought I'd never say this, because I haven't done anything with farming in about 45 years. It was late 60s or early 70s the last time that I did anything with farming. And I think that people are more health conscious. And when somebody brings it to your mind that, taste this, you got this at a supermarket, but I grew this myself, and when you taste one against the other, you're saying, my God, it's not a carrot, it's not a turnip, it's a different taste altogether. So people are more health conscious now, and I think that more people are getting into it. I just, this past year, I thought I never would get back into farming again, and I'm not getting into farming. But I just built a greenhouse, and I have this...
That sounds a lot like you're getting into farming.
Don't say it.
No, okay, sorry. No, that's everybody builds greenhouses and don't care about farms. You're right.
And I'm not growing flowers, but right now, this year, first time ever, I got carrots, I got parsnip, I got beets, I got Brussels sprouts, I got turnip, I got celery, and then in the greenhouse, I got some different types of tomatoes and strawberries and different types of peppers. Yeah, I'm farming.
I'm sorry to say, there, somewhere, Charlie, there was a gateway drug that got you back into farming.
Well, I don't know what it is, and I thought I'd never do it, and I really didn't have what you would call a hobby. But now, since I built this greenhouse, and it's only in my backyard, I spend more time, my spare time, out weeding and enjoying it. I don't know why. I guess before I had to do it. Yeah. It was something to survive. But now it's something that you're doing, and you're just watching and watching this grown, and you know that it's going to be something that you're going to appreciate once it is grown. And we're also eating different things. We didn't grow peppers. back in. We grew the rough grub. We grew turnips and carrots and cabbage and onion. That was your basic thing that you grew. Yeah. Now you're growing all kinds of little things, and strawberries was something that you bought. Well, you didn't buy. You see the rich people buying them in the store, and we would pick berries and that sort of thing.
When you're out on the water, was there a song that goes through your head?
Back a few years ago, we put out a CD in Cape one time, and it has done quite well in Newfoundland, and that song, somebody during the week will mention to you when the Capelin roll, if the fish is in, if the weather is foggy, it's Capelin weather, so...
I tried to get you to sing a verse, but...
Well, I wouldn't get me to sing it. My wife sang it,
okay.
And I wouldn't do that. I play it on the accordion. I play the accordion. My wife plays guitar and sings. It works out quite well. Yeah.
Boston town. An old man died one day. Dreaming of his home so far away. He must have known his words were all in vain. When it's Capelin time again, I wanna go back. When it's Capelin time again, I want to walk in the softly falling rain and hear a thousand times, not even caring what was on the old man's mind as he told tales of his boyhood on the sand when 'twas Capelin time back home. Soon return, but times were bad and money must be earned. Now the years have gone like the softly fallen rain. He can't go back when it's Capelin time. Capelin time again. I want to walk in the softly falling rain and hear again the lonely seagulls cry. Oh, take me home once more before.
That's the Dunn family with the song Capelin Time. I'm talking with one of the members of that band, Charlie. We start off this section with a somber chat about the challenges of rural Newfoundland.
I mean, rural Newfoundland, in my opinion, a different topic altogether. Rural Newfoundland is dying.
What sense? Is it on palliative care at the moment?
Well, I got to tell you something. I'm going to say yes. I would say in the next 20 years that you are going to see this town of Ferryland, where I'm living now, is going to be, I think, is going to be a tourism town. Where what's going to happen is that as my generation gets a bit older, right now I'm 59 years old, so give me another 20 years and other people another 20 years, and as you get health issues, who wants to be living in rural Newfoundland, an hour away from a hospital, in the middle of a snowstorm, when you have to try to get into the hospital in an ambulance?
So rural Newfoundland had to be populated back in the day because it was relying on fisheries. There had to be somebody here going out, coming back, putting fish on the flakes and so on. What do we need rural Newfoundland for now?
Rural Newfoundland right now is space. I have a bed and breakfast and I just realize, I mean, you look out and you're thankful every day, something you hardly ever did when you were growing up. I remember when I got married and came to Ferryland and I seen tourists passing by the house and they stop and take a picture out towards the islands. And I remember one day saying to them, what are you taking a picture of? There's nothing out there. It's true. And when we fished, if you saw a whale, you were cursed up in the clouds because the whale was going to come in and you know it was going to go into your cod trap and tear it up, which meant that now you had to take the cod trap in. If you saw an iceberg, there's pieces breaking out of that. Now, if there's an iceberg or there's a whale, the first person going for a camera is the fisherman. You appreciate it all.
So one of the uses of rural Newfoundland, to put it really bluntly, I guess, is tourism.
Right now, we're totally dependent. I think rural Newfoundland is become dependent on tourism. Yeah. The unfortunate thing is that we haven't got enough to keep tourists here for 12 months of the year. It's roughly 4 months, and it's not even 4 months.
Yeah.
We have a bed and breakfast, and you'll take, we open in May and we close in September. May, June, and September is one good month. July and August are the other ones. So you got 3 good months of tourism. That's basically what you got.
The provincial government has this new plan. So they're going to double agricultural production in the province in 5 years. If they were to actually do that, would that provide some sort of economic development in rural Newfoundland? Because that's an area where you could do agriculture. Do you see any hope that farming can kind of save parts of rural Newfoundland?
I think that possibly it will, but I got to tell you, I think that if rural Newfoundland is going to be saved, then I don't care what the government puts in there, because I believe that, yes, they may be trying to put agriculture in here, but I think it's a long-term plan for the government to try to move as many people as close to St. John's as possible, because it's too costly for the upkeep of the roads, for doctors, for RCMP, for schools. I mean, we're a dying breed. I mean, we're only an hour from St. John's, and back in 1992, here in our school, and we only have one school here now, when we had maybe about five. We have one in Cape Royal, 2 in Ferryland, 1 in Fermuse, 1 in Renos. We got one school here now, and back in 1992, we had 780 students in our school system. Right now, we're down below 200. But now, you go closer to St. John's, the perimeter of St. John's, our children, that's where they're too. The schools are busting at the seams. We had all this out-migration in 1992. It was probably not the question you asked, but anyways, I get it off my chest. We had all this out-migration in 1992. And of course, people had to leave out of desperation. People sold houses for little or nothing to get enough money to go to Alberta to work. Now they work their way up at the oil company. Oil is discovered off of Newfoundland. Now they're all coming back, but they're not coming back to the towns they left. They don't want to be in St. John's because they're not city folk, but all the perimeter of St. John's, you go to Mobile, Bay Bulls and Whitless Bay, you go to Tor Bay and Outer Cove and Paradise, and you'll see all those subdivisions with our young kids that came back and settled there, because there's nothing in rural Newfoundland, the business is closed. Personally, I think the only way rural Newfoundland is going to survive is if we have immigrants come in. I think that's the only way Newfoundland is going to survive, and people may face it, and it faces the fact that we were all immigrants once. For rural Newfoundland, you have people living in other parts of the world that are dying for a place to live, and they would love to work at agriculture or something else, bring them in.
So if you have somebody here from away, and you want to make something for them, some food that's distinctively Newfoundland, what would you make for them?
Probably, like, say, preserved moose or bottle moose that we call it. Fish is the big thing you're going to have. Yeah. And right now we got snow crab. Snow crab is monitored to death. And when we fish, I don't think that you can buy snow crab in Newfoundland at a restaurant because it's all exported because of the American dollar. So if I knew I was having somebody come to the house and I wanted to have snow crab, when we bring the crab into the plant, you weigh off 5 or 10 pounds. And that comes off your quota. Basically, you get a receipt at the end of the week saying personal use and what you sold or whatever. Yeah. So you would give them crab. You would give them, again, you'd have fish. Or you would probably even go like cod tongues or something like that. If you go away, you know, you bring some fish with you. You go to Florida in the fall of the year. You bring some, I remember going back a few years ago. Brought 150 pounds of fish to Florida. 350-pound boxes. Can you imagine? If there had been flies, they would have been jailed. Yeah. When you get off the plane, there's no trouble in Northern Newfoundland with a 50-pound box of fish and flies jailed.
Leaking box.
Leaking box of fish, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Did you eat lobster when you were growing up?
I don't like lobster.
You don't like lobster.
I don't like crab.
Don't like crab.
No, I don't know what it is with the shellfish. Yeah. Now, my wife with crab, she will make a little crab dip that you put on a cracker or something. I can eat it like that. I think it's too much work. People come in trying to break crab out of a shell. And for what you're getting out of it, you see them and they're cutting down and there's juice squirting up in their face and on the wall. And you say, for what? Give me a piece of moose or give me a few potatoes or something.
How long have you had the bed and breakfast?
The bed and breakfast. Or I built the bed and breakfast myself and our son in 2010. Something like gardening. Yeah. Never talked about having a bed and breakfast in our lives. And we were sitting down in January, and we were talking about having our 30th wedding anniversary. We were both turning 50, and we were going to have a party for our 30th wedding anniversary in September. So we said, where are we going to have the party? The house is not big enough. So just next door to our house, there was a convent that had closed in 1986, and our good friends and neighbors operated as a bed and breakfast. And anyways, we said, maybe we'll have it over at the old convent. And our son Lee was there, and he said, Dad, he said, that's not going to open anymore. He said, it needs too many renovations. And he said, you should buy that. And he said, you can do the work on it. He said, and open it under new management. And I said, Lee, for the love of God, if they gave it to me for nothing, a big building like that was going to cost me at least $250,000. I said, sure, if I was going to open a bed and breakfast, I said, which I'm not, I said, I'd build my own. And I said, that way then you can give everybody a view of the ocean, their own bathroom, put proper insulation in there. He said, why don't you do that? And of course, my wife Maxine goes, I says, the sound that changed the world. And I said, would you want to have a bed and breakfast? She says, you know what? Now, she's a curator of the museum for the past 30 years. And she said, you know what? I think I would. That was in January. She sat down and she drew up the floor plan. And 6 weeks later, the 10th of March, myself and our son started and we built it. And the rest is history.
So you said you'd never garden, and now you're gardening. You said you'd never have a bed and breakfast, you got a bed and breakfast.
I know.
Things happen in threes, so what's the next thing?
I don't know.
What else have you said you'd never do?
I'd never retire.
Okay, well.
I thought I'd never retire. But well, as time goes on now, I'm kind of looking forward to that too.
And now I stand where he once stood before, with silver capelins splashing on the shore. I pray to God he can somehow understand. I took him home, back home to Newfoundland. I wanna go back when it's capelin time again. I want to
It's Capelin Time by the Dunn family. I'm talking today to Charlie Dunn, fisher, carpenter, gardener, B&B operator. If you stay at his operation, you'll likely get a mini concert in the morning with breakfast. He and his wife may even do that song. In this section, we talk about the beauty that surrounds us in this province, how we can learn from tourists to fully appreciate what we have. And Charlie recounts a great story about his relationship with a famous iceberg.
I hadn't realized it until we had our bed and breakfast, and you had people coming from outside of Newfoundland, from bigger cities, and sitting down in my window that I've looked out through for years and years, and in awe, can't believe that people are living like this, have an open view of the ocean, watching a cruise ship passing by, watching whales in the water, watching icebergs, and I can do that every day. So it gives you an appreciation for what you got. And thank God we have our health and strength and that we can do this, and hopefully we continue to do it. And if, you know, farming is what I got to do to stay here in rural Newfoundland and keep healthy and eat healthier, well, I'll do that.
You had a bit of a famous episode with a famous iceberg that has saved our provincial tourism
well,
product.
It's so funny because we had this iceberg last year right out from the bed and breakfast. I remember coming home one day and my wife Maxine was sitting down and she said, I just got a call, she said, from a radio station, National Public Radio in California. And they wanted to do an interview with her. I guess they tracked her down through the museum or whatever about the iceberg. And I said, that's great. We're going to call her back in about a half an hour. Myself and a buddy of mine, Joe Arsenal, have this drone company. And we do drone footage of, like say, icebergs, whales, the landscape and whatever. And I had done a video of the iceberg and put it on YouTube. While my wife was waiting for the call from National Public Radio, CTV Television in Ontario called me and wanted to do a live interview with me. So I said, okay. And I did a live interview with her. When I got off the phone, Maxine said BBC in the UK had contacted her, wanted to do an interview. Great. That night she did that. So that night we were sitting down a few of us watching the Leafs game. And by the way, go Leafs, go.
How are they doing?
They're marvelous.
Oh,
they have a 5-year building plan and they're working on it.
Excellent.
So in 10 years time to be there. But sitting down watching the Leafs game and the phone rang. And this lady said she was calling from a radio station in New Zealand, wondering if I'd be interested in doing an interview. She had seen the interview that day on CTV television. So anyway, I did an interview with this guy, John Campbell, and he was an absolutely wonderful, wonderful fella. We sort of played off each other, and for some reason, the interview went viral. Within 2 days, there was over 800,000 people viewed this interview. Then we had a call from a lady, Dasha Burns, who was a producer of the Today Show on in NBC in New York. She contacted us. She came to the bed and breakfast. We brought her out on the boat to the iceberg, screeched them in, had a few crab, and they did a show on NBC about us at the bed and breakfast and this iceberg. It's spring in Newfoundland. It's an iceberg, people. We see them all the time, you know, but I guess that's, you know, and I don't know. This happens every year. It's just that they come to shore, depending on the winds and the tides. And last year, it happened to come into us. And if we had some way of tying it down, we would have done that. And where we're through right now, right out through the window here. And if you look at the restaurant that's right here in front of us, this restaurant changed the name of the restaurant because of the iceberg. Everybody was coming along, and at the time, it was the only iceberg. It was roughly 350 feet long. There was a reality show out of Toronto called The Bachelor. They flew in the crew, and they did a show around this iceberg. This guy brought in one of the girls he was courting, and they kayaked around the iceberg, and they came in on the beach, and they had a picnic. She wasn't the least bit impressed.
So it didn't work well.
It was too close to the iceberg. It was too cold. But he changed it because everybody was coming to look at this iceberg. And he said, oh my God, you have a $1 million view. He changed the name of the restaurant to the $1 million view restaurant. He hasn't seen an iceberg since. But you know, these are the things that happen. Exactly. These are things that happen. And you know, little stories that will kind of go down in history. Yeah. And it's great. I tell you, you look out and you see an iceberg now, and you know, or a whale, which we do see fairly often. And you appreciate what you're doing. Yeah.
Well, good luck fishing tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I'll be actually leaving in about 5 hours, 6 hours.
Excellent. Enjoy. Thanks so much, Charlie. You're very gracious with your time.
Not a problem at all. I hope that I'll continue on to be healthy and that we'll all be able to encourage other people to get out and start farming. You know, we all got to live healthy and live as long as you can. And if you don't eat healthy and exercise and do what you got to do, there's a fellow said one time, if you want to live longer, well, pick the right descendants.
That was Charlie Dunn, in conversation in Fairyland, Newfoundland. Sometimes, months after I record these chats, I come back to them to do the editing, and I relive the conversation. I laughed out loud as I listened to Charlie's stories and the warmth of his voice. Too bad I had to cut the conversation in half and more, but that's show business. Remember, you're living in the good old days. Don't let them pass without appreciating them.
I remember when I got married and came to Fairyland, and I seen tourists passing by the house and they stop and take a picture out towards the islands. And I remember one day saying to them, what are you taking a picture of? There's nothing out there. Personally, I think the only way rural Newfoundland is going to survive is if we have immigrants come in. It was probably not the question you asked, but anyways, I get it off my chest.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was Capelin Time by the Dunn Family. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by Vivian and Phil Williams. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
But to me, the good old days are now.